This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Riders, the civil rights activists, black and white, who in May 1961 decided to test a 1960 Supreme Court ruling that segregation inside bus terminals was illegal. Now, that's key. The Supreme Court ruled that bus terminal restaurants, for instance, inside, could not discriminate. Buses, of course, were famously segregated, despite Rosa Parks' historic 1955 ride. And in the 1961 Jim Crow South, terminals and restaurants were still segregated with black and white-only areas, despite the 1960 ruling. The activists, organized by the Congress for Racial Equality, were determined to remain nonviolent as they rode buses and integrated the restaurants. But as a new PBS documentary reminds us, they were met with horrible violence, trapped in torched buses, attacked by mobs, while local governments looked the other way.
There was a mob looking like 1,000 people. They had these iron pipes.
They were screaming, "Kill them niggas," and they had babies in their arms.
I asked God to be with me, to give me the strength I would need to remain nonviolent and to forgive them.
Sound from the film Freedom Riders, which airs tonight on PBS stations. And today we want to focus on just one sliver of that story inside the Justice Department. Robert Kennedy was Attorney General at the time. He initially criticized the Freedom Riders for pushing too hard against the status quo. But Kennedy and his lead attorney, Nicholas Katzenbach, soon knew the government had to respond. Enter Robert Salishin, a career government attorney working for Katzenbach in the Office of Legal Counsel. Bob Salishin also happens to be the father of our colleague Marianne Nichols, which is how we learn about all this. And Bob Salishin joins us from the NPR studios in Washington. Bob, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So take us to the Justice Department. All sorts of tension. What was that tension from the Justice Department?
The Justice Department had two objectives. The first objective was to protect these people from being killed or badly beaten up, and the second objective was to secure their constitutional rights in traveling between states on these bus companies, Greyhound and the rest of them. The department had a certain range of what might be called tools or remedies, and none of them were practicable in this situation.
Explain why.
Well, all right. Remedy number one would be to ask Congress to pass a law guaranteeing enforcement of the right to travel without discrimination from one part of the United States to another. That was really impracticable because President Kennedy, who was a Democrat, was dependent upon the Democrats in Congress, which included a lot of Southern Democrats whose constituencies were not at all sympathetic to helping the Freedom Riders. The next thing would be to go into court and try to get some Southern federal judge to issue an injunction against both the mobs, if you could identify the people in the mobs, and local governments that were trying to enforce their Jim Crow laws. The trouble with that is that it would certainly be appealed, and it would drag on for perhaps as long as a year or maybe even longer, whereas the Freedom Riders were being threatened and beaten up right then and there. The third possibility was to use the Army. In this situation, they would have to be all over every place that a interstate bus had a bus stop in any of the southern states, or many of the southern states. There were also practical problems of inflaming the violence to be even at a higher pitch. None of these three things was a practical method of vindicating the rights that the Freedom Riders were trying to assert.
You came up with an idea. What was that idea?
I happen to remember that 9 years earlier, I had taken a job at the old Civil Aeronautics Board, and the first thing they did, of course, was to make me read the law which had been passed under which the board operated in regulating the airlines. And I remember being struck by a section that prohibited the airlines from any kind of discrimination. I had a hunch that the reason it got in the law was that the people who were given the job of drafting the law looked at earlier federal laws on other modes of interstate transportation, including the buses. Well, it took less than 5 minutes to check that out, and word for word, exactly the same provision applied to buses who were regulated by the Interstate Commerce Commission. Well, that was a way out of this mess. The same afternoon, we had a petition drafted to the Interstate Commerce Commission to make the bus companies obey the law. The Interstate Commerce Commission was shocked at being dragged into this violent racial dispute. They thought they were just regulating the business angles of the bus business, but they gulped, I guess, and issued an order to the bus companies to stop segregating, either in the buses or in the bus stations.
Amazing. And yet we still have a couple of questions, because we understood, as we said, that the Freedom Riders had set out to test a Supreme Court decision that outlawed segregation in restaurants and terminals and such. So why is it that you discovering that when Congress first decided to cover interstate buses, they also dictated that there would be no segregation or discrimination in bus travel, why did that suddenly make everyone snap to attention when the previous law outlawing segregation in bus terminal restaurants didn't?
Well, the previous law was not a law in the sense of being a statute passed by Congress. It was a court decision, and lawyers will tell you that this is the kind of thing that lawyers have been arguing about for centuries, probably.
Well, and you say that this, pointing out to the ICC that they had this responsibility, made them snap to attention. Tell us more about why it did, because, again, the overwhelming sense was that there was no respect for the law in the South.
Well, you have to use a little bit of imagination here. The bus companies would be out of business if the Interstate Commerce Commission revoked their rights to provide service between points in different states. Nobody in any of the, so far as I know, in any of the local governments tried to compel the bus companies to violate the order of the Interstate Commerce Commission.
And your name was put on the petition to the Interstate Commerce Commission because, as your boss at the Office of Legal Counsel said, it was a reward for your ingenuity.
The idea surfaced from me to Nick Katzenbach and Bobby Kennedy because they had a very collegial atmosphere toward career people in the Justice Department. And in that way, they were able to tap what some people call the institutional memory of career government people. For that reason, it's very unfortunate when people badmouth government workers in a general and sweeping way. There are undoubtedly, in any big organization, likely to be some people who are substandard, and of course, that would certainly be true in government also. But there are also large numbers of experienced, dedicated people, and you want to take advantage of it to get things that ought to be done, done.
Former Justice Department Attorney Robert Salatin talking about his role in ending segregation in the South. Bob Salatin, thank you so much.
You're welcome indeed. My pleasure.
Buses are a-coming, oh yes. Buses are a-coming, buses are a-coming, buses are a-coming.